Hi everyone, this is Michael McCurdy with TestyMom.com. We want to welcome you to today's teleseminar. And today I also have Karen Quinn, the Testy Mom, with us. Hi, Karen.
Hi everybody, how are you? Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Hi everyone. Hey, looks like we have several people on the call tonight, so we are today. We really appreciate everyone taking the time out of their busy schedule to join us, and we look forward to talking to you over the next 45 minutes to an hour. We have a really great topic tonight, and Karen's going to lead off with that topic, and it's to go over the 20 questions that we sent out to everyone last week, and they're also accessible on the TestyMom.com website under Parents Resources under the bonus questions area. You'll see that, and we'll be sending more bonus questions here in the next couple of days as well. And then after Karen goes through the questions and you know, helps us really understand how to ask these questions and what to look for when your child responds to these questions, we'll be also addressing a few of the questions that we received over the last week or so. If time allows, we'll try to get to as many of those as possible. So with that being said, please help me welcome Karen, and I'll turn it over to you, Karen.
Thanks. Everybody, what might be really helpful, if you could, is if you went to testingmom.com and you log in while we're talking, and you pull up those 20 questions that we sent. I think we sent them on Friday of last week. Because what I thought I would do is talk just a little bit of the about each of the different kinds of questions that your child is getting. And these particular questions in this 20 question handout, they are modeled after the OLSAT, and they're modeled after the Bracken as well. So they're supportive of both tests. And so if you can pull that up, then, you know, we'll talk about these questions. And the first question, it's actually the first question, I think the second question, actually the first five questions are all questions under the category called following directions or follow directions. And this part of the test, it really is important that your child is able to listen to the proctor when they're asking the questions, because they are not allowed to repeat them. And they're actually that's part of the test, is does your child listen and remember, you know, what they're being asked to do. This particular part of the test is really testing your child's working memory, which is, you know, you give the child some instructions and they put them in their memory bank, and then they do something with them. They remember what they're being asked, and then they, you know, give you the answer. So the first one is really an easy question. It's an A-level question. You know, I think it says, ask your child to point to the bird inside a birdhouse. And, you know, then there's a picture of different pictures of birds, and then they have to pick out the right one. So they have to remember they're looking for a bird inside. They have to know what inside means, a birdhouse. So that's a really easy one. The next question, it's also following directions. Ask your child to point to the letters that are different sizes. So again, it's a simple one. They just have to know different. What does different mean? Different sizes. And so again, that is a following directions question, a very easy one. The third question, it starts to get a little bit harder. And here it says there's four pictures of a cat, a mouse, and a bird. And they're in each picture, the little characters are all in different locations. And this is a very typical question. You know, the first one, the bird is in the cage, the cat is on the chair, the mouse is behind the chair. And then the next one, the bird is outside the cage, and the cat is on the chair, and the mouse is in front of the chair. So it's really minor differences in each picture, if you can see that. And then the question is, ask your child to point to the picture where the mouse is behind the chair, the cat is on top of the chair, and the bird is in the cage. So they have to remember all three of those things while they're looking at the picture and trying to identify all three of those situations. And that is that's a little bit harder following directions question. That is actually a level C question. So that's a little if you have a younger child going into kindergarten, that might be harder than the kinds of questions that they're going to get. But if you have a child going into second or third grade, that is very typical of the kind of question they're going to get. And the fourth question is a level B question. So it's a little easier than the one we just did. Again, it's a following directions question. And they have to listen carefully. You know, ask your child to point to the picture that shows Emma wearing a bathing suit, sunglasses, and flippers. So they have to remember those three things, look at all the pictures and all the different elements of the pictures, and try to figure out which picture did that question describe. That's a B-level question. And then, again, the fifth question is also a following direction question. And the thing that's a little different about this one, they're asking, ask your child to point to the picture that that shows two diagonal lines pointing in the same direction. And in this particular question, they have to know the meaning of the word diagonal. And this is something that is on the Bracken test. The children need to understand what diagonal means. That's just one of the types of things they're going to need to know. And so we sort of mixed it up with a Olsat type question here. But again, these first five questions are all following directions, okay? And you'll get a lot of these on the Olsat. The next two questions.
Karen, I have a question. This is Michael. So if my child is, you know, I'm practicing with my daughter as an example, and then she, you know, is like number four with the swimsuit or the bathing suit question, and she gets it wrong, I mean, what strategies do you suggest as far as, should I just start with, you know, working with the first two? Show me the little girl, you know, wearing flippers in a bathing suit, and then add the third one later till she masters two?
If you find that she's having trouble with that this is too much for her, then, you know, in the real test, they're not going to repeat the question. But when you're trying to teach her to learn and to learn how to listen, what you might want to do is say, let's go back and let me ask you the question really slowly, and we can think through it together. So in this question, you could say, okay, can you point to the picture that shows Emma wearing a bathing suit? And then you could say, now which ones show Emma wearing a bathing suit? Well, they all do. Okay, so they're all showing her wearing a bathing suit. Okay, and sunglasses. Which ones show her wearing sunglasses? And then you can point, your child can look at the three pictures with the sunglasses. And finally, and flippers. And which ones have flippers? And then your child can find that. And you could say, okay, so the question is, which point to the picture that shows Emma wearing a bathing suit, sunglasses, and flippers? And then they'll be able to point right to it. So I think that's a really good idea, is if they're having trouble with it, to break it down for them in practice, you know, and then you can say, you know, when you actually go in, or when you start the question, you can say, now listen really carefully, and you can try doing it with the three elements that are asked. But if they can't get all three, then do it piece by piece and let them just practice listening very carefully to each piece of it, and then let them put it together. I think that's a really good strategy. So, any other questions about the following directions kinds of questions? I mean, these get really hard, I have to tell you.
They do, especially for a pre-K and kindergartner, especially pre-K. Mm-hmm. If you have a four-year-old taking this test, it's extremely difficult.
It's hard because they have to remember. They have to really listen, and they have to remember, and that's hard. I have
in this question number five, like a lot of many four-year-olds, you know, the brightest out there, if they've never been exposed to the word diagonal, they won't know.
Right.
And a lot of this is just exposure.
That's my question in question number five. Mm-hmm. What if the child has never heard the word diagonal? Like
then,
my daughter looked at this and she said, Mommy, what does diagonal mean?
Exactly. Well, that's why you should try to expose her to that word now. But there may be other words that your child has never been exposed to. I mean, and they just, what you want them to tell them to do when they're tested, and what the proctor will say is, well, what's your best guess, or what do you think the answer is? And when they're faced with that, and they, you know, you want them to make a guess, because they're not going to lose points for making a guess.
Okay.
And they might get it right. They might just chance and get it right. But you know, hopefully we'll give you questions that have a lot of the kinds of words that they're going to be exposed, that they're going to see on the test. And that's one of them, is diagonal lines could be on the Bracken, and it could be in an OLSAT question as well.
Right, and one of the other, this is Michael, one of the other things that's kind of, it's the verbiage that you're also using with your child on a daily basis. So talking in terms of like either or, neither nor, less than, greater than, using those type of terms or phrases that are usually on these types of tests actually is very beneficial. And it's normally not a way a parent talks to their child,
mm-hmm.
So, in everyday conversation. And some of these concepts, especially this one, like number five as an example, diagonal. So if your child struggles with this question as an example, one thing you can do is, you know, when you're going out and you're shopping or at the store or taking your daughter to school or preschool or son, point to diagonal shapes or diagonal angles that you see as you're walking down the street or in your car. And that way it'll give them a frame of reference of a real life situation where, oh, that's diagonal, it's not straight. So,
right.
You know, it's really incorporating this in your daily life as well.
Right. Exactly. And then we were looking at the next group of questions, which are called the six and seven. They're called oral, A-U-R-A-L, reasoning questions. And these are two pretty easy questions. And what these are is your child hears a question, but the answer isn't right there. They actually have to think about it and actually use their thinking skills, their reasoning skills to come up with an answer. So, Sammy was going to a picnic. His mother told him to bring something that he could throw at the park with his dad. Can you point to the toy that Sammy packed? Well, he's got to look at all of these and say, okay, well, which ones of these kinds of toys do you throw? Oh, the ball. Okay, so he's using his reasoning skills to get to the answer there. And then on the next one, and this is like what Michael was just talking about, the neither nor.
Right.
Can you point to the thing that neither flies nor floats? So they need to know that concept of it neither flies and nor does it float. So that means it does not do that. So you can play with things like that at home, just like Michael said, and then that gets us to the answer, which is number four. And, at the A level, it's pretty simple. You know, so at the kindergarten level, kids going into kindergarten, I mean, it'll be a really simple question like, you know, mark under the picture that shows something you would use to clean your teeth, and there'll be a toothbrush among all the pictures, and that's an easy one. But as it gets into the B and C level questions, they do get harder, and they require a lot more thinking on the part of the child. But the two that we have here are A levels, and we're going to be sending you out more questions that are a mixture of A, B level for those of you with younger kids, and for those of you with the older kids, we're going to be sending out C, D level questions, so you'll have some harder ones to work with. And I do want to say, for those of you with older kids, you can still work with the easier questions, and you should work with the easier questions, because the thing about the Bracken and the OLSAT is that the questions are going to be the same, follow the same format on the OLSAT, no matter how old your child is. So if a child does some, let's say, matrix questions that are easy for them, they're still doing the thinking skills that go with thinking through an analogy question, which is what a matrix question is. So even though these might be a little easy for your child, go ahead and do them because they're practicing the thinking skills, and we're still going to send you some harder ones as well. But with younger kids, you can't do the harder ones because they're just not developmentally ready to do those. On number eight, this actually is another following directions type of question. We kind of mix them up a little bit. And this one says, can you point to the picture that shows two shapes that are the same with a square in the middle? So again, do you see how you have to listen very carefully to remember that and then see which one of the answers fits what they're being asked? And this is something that you're going to see a lot of on all tests. The concepts of same and different, and also the concepts of positioning, which is, you know, what's in the middle, what's in between, what's on the end. Those are the kinds of concepts that you'll see on all tests, and you'll certainly see it on the Bracken and on the OLSAT, and that's what you have in this question here.
Right, and one concept that I've heard from various people is the concept of shallow. So make sure your child knows what shallow versus
shallow
deep
and
is.
Deep. Shallow
yeah.
and deep.
Shallow
yeah.
is not a really common word that most four-year-olds have been exposed to.
Yeah, that's right. I think we have a question that we are sending out in the next few. I think I wrote some new daily questions, and I have a shallow, deep question that's coming out.
Oh, great.
So you're gonna
You've been writing questions for a week, so.
Yeah, I know. I have been writing a lot of questions. Okay, but I remember that one. Okay, the next four questions that you have on this handout are all either picture or figure classification questions. And what this is with these, you're generally asking what doesn't belong. Among, you know, five pictures, which one is different and does not belong in the group? And in all cases, it's almost like they have to figure out, well, what's the rule of the ones that do belong? And once they figure that out, they can figure out what does not belong. So, for example, so when you're sort of coaching them, that's where you want to have them do, like, well, what's the same how are these two the same, and how are these two the same? So they're, you figure out kind of what's the same, and then you can figure out which one just doesn't fit the rule. But in this one, the black box is always in the corner except for in the middle one. And so that's what you want them to recognize is that black box and where it is. And then in the second one, and that's an A-level question, so that's a pretty easy question. The second one, also an A-level question, what do you notice about all these things? Well, they're all things you can eat except for the cup. You don't need a cup. So that's how they would answer that one. The third one is a B-level question. It's a harder question. It is a much harder question, actually. It probably should be a C question as I look at it. But what you have there is a telescope. You have a thermometer, a microscope, eyeglasses, and a magnifying glass. And so your child has to figure out that these are all things that help you see better, except for the thermometer. So this is a little harder because they have to know what these things are. They have to know what a microscope is, what a telescope is. So this might be harder for some kids, but this is very typical of the kind of question that will be asked. And the next question is another one very similar. It's a pretty easy question. And what you want your child to notice here is that the line dividing the shapes are dividing them in half. But except for on the second one, it's not quite in half. It's about a third. So they have to notice that. And so what you might want to do, again, when you're practicing these questions, if your child's having trouble, just pull out maybe two of them that you know are alike. And you could say, like, for example, in this one, you might pull out the triangle and the heart. And you could say, well, what's the same about these two? And hopefully your child will notice they're divided in half. And then you could start to say, well, is this one divided in half? Yes. Is this one divided in half? Yes. Is this one? And then hopefully they'll notice that it's not divided in half. Michael, did you want to add anything here?
Oh, no. This is great, Karen. This is really, really useful. The only thing I would want to add, if your child is taking the OLSAT, keep in mind that the OLSAT is given in black and white. So the pictures you see here that we had one of our illustrators create for us, it's just really to get your child engaged into the question. So that's the reason why all the questions that we give you are not in black and white. We just really want the child to be engaged. We feel color is a really good engagement tool for the children. But we also have incorporated black and white questions as well, so your child will be still used to seeing black and white questions. But the OLSAT, if your child is taking the OLSAT, is all black and white.
Right, but you could always print it out in black and white if you want to.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
If you want to practice in black and white, you could do that. Okay, the next group of questions, these are called, let me back up a second because I actually noticed that one of the questions someone had asked us, and I'd like to bring this up in the context of these questions. Someone had asked us that they had heard that the classification section on the test can be confusing because the questions can have seemingly more than one right answer, although one is more obvious than the other, and they wanted to ask about that. And so what I want to point out is that in these types of questions, when they're easy questions, when they're like A-level questions, the answers are usually so obvious there's just no question as to, you know, there couldn't possibly be another answer. The B-level questions might get a little bit harder. It's really in the C and D level where they might put maybe two things in that could confuse a child, because a child who's really thinking might think, oh, well, gee, that could be different because, and they could come up with a reason for it. But in all of these, there's always going to be one that's the most obvious, the most correct answer. And so there may be times when your child is going to have to make a little judgment call if two things could possibly be the answer, but one just seems more right than the other. And that's kind of hard, and that'll happen in the C and D level types of questions more than in the A and B level types of questions. Anyway, so we're going to go now to the analogies. These are called figure and picture analogies. And the way these work is that your child has to discern a rule between the top two pictures. And then they have to find, on the bottom, they have to create two pictures that follow the same rule by picking one of the answers on the right. And so here, the first one, very simple A-level question. It's a heart, you know, divided in half, and it's the exact same thing, only smaller. So then we have the bigger square divided in half, and what you're going to look for is the exact same thing, only smaller. And so when you're reading the question to your child, if they have trouble with this, have them focus on the thing on the top and say, well, how do these two things, how are they alike? What's the same about them? Well, they're both hearts. They're both cut in half, but, oh, this one's smaller. And then help them realize, well, you're looking for exactly the same thing, only smaller. And this is one of those things there, this is a very easy question, but even if you have an older child, these are the kinds of rules that you'll even see on harder questions. So practicing these will not hurt your child at all, and they might be very helpful. The next one is another analogy question. It is a harder question. This is a C-level question. You have a cruise ship, and then you have a speedboat. And, you know, how are these related? Well, they're both boats, but one is huge, and one also goes on the water, but it's small. And then you've got a jet, which is big, and then you've got to find an airplane maybe that's smaller. But this is a harder question. You'll see when you do this with your child. This is going to be harder for kids. You know, it's just the thinking is just a little more sophisticated. So that's a very good example of a pictorial analogy. And then on the next one, we have another same thing, number 15, another analogy. And again, they just have to notice that across the top, these are figures. It's the same thing, only the colors are opposite. You know, here the circles are dark. And in the right box they're white, and the middle triangle is light in the left box, but it's dark in the right box. So for the bottom, you're just looking for something that's the opposite, and that's a concept that's important for your child to know anyway, the opposite. And so you'll help them, if hopefully they'll just automatically see the difference, but if not, you can just walk them through it.
This one is really tricky.
Well, it starts to get tricky when you start.
Yeah, this one's like, wait, which one is it? Just because of each of the answers next to each other, it's like, wait.
It's confusing. Yeah, it is confusing when you start to see these figures next to each other. It's very easy to make a mistake.
And that's why we encourage parents, you know, to work with their children on these concepts in general, because if your child has never been exposed to these types of concepts, then they'll do poorly on this test.
Right. But if you practice it, you know, and talk it through and take it slowly when they're learning, you know, then they'll be in much better shape when they're actually taking the real test. The next number 16, 17, 18, these are all in a category called picture and figure series. And what these are, you're going to see patterns in these, you know, so that it might be, and in fact, the number 16 is a pattern. It's one lemon, two lemons, three lemons, one lemon, and then what comes next. And so they can figure out the pattern. And most kids are pretty good at patterns. But there, you know, but then you might get things like hot dogs, French fries, hot dogs, French fries. And then there might be three different pictures. You know, it starts to get more sophisticated, sometimes four pictures, and then they have to start over again. But so patterns are very common. And then the other thing is that it could be a progression. And so the question number 17, you've got a cake, and then you've got one piece that's been eaten out of it, and then two pieces, and then three pieces, and then what comes next? Well, it's the cake that has four pieces taken out of it. And so in this type of question, you might see a pumpkin being carved, each stage of a pumpkin being carved, or you might see an iceberg melting and getting smaller, or you might see birds hatching, you know. So and in each box, the next thing happens, and then the next thing happens, and your child has to figure out what's the very next thing that would happen. And it's the same with number 18. Again, this would be sort of a pattern, but they have to figure out in this one what the rule is. And what they have to do is they have to look at, okay, what's happening in these, we've got six circles and one is black. Well, the black circle is moving down, and then it's moving down, and then it's moving over, and what would happen to it next? And they have to think about that and figure out that the next logical thing to have happen is it would start to move up.
Hello?
And so that's something they're going to have to sort of figure out. And this is kind of a pattern. And so, you know, that's so you want to, you know, see if they can get it on their own. But if they can't, you can talk it through with them, because this is also a typical kind of question you'll see on the LSAT.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, I'm sorry. I have a question.
Don't be sorry. That's okay.
Number 18 be considered a level D?
No, that's really a level B.
B.
B, C, yeah. That's a little harder than an A. It's harder than an A, but I see things like this under B or C maybe.
Yeah, I would think it would be a B level.
At least a B, but maybe even a C. But you see, it's almost like you're going to have to – it's almost a little bit like a matrix question where you sort of say, well, what's the rule? What is happening here? And what you and that's where you – when you talk it through with your child, if they're a little confused, is, well, look, the black ball is at the top, and then it goes down, and then it goes down, and then it goes over – where's it going to go next? It's moving in order, so you want it to move up now, because that's what it's doing. It's moving in order. So it's a little harder, but it's a good one to practice. And then number 19 is what's called a pattern matrix. And what this is it's like a matrix question, similar because it's a matrix, but it's got six. Instead of four, you know, squares, it's got six squares, and the bottom right square is empty. And what they often have to do is look at the overall picture and the pattern that's being created among the images inside. And here you see, you know, if you look, it's the same thing all across. The rows are the same. However, the shapes have a different, you know, inside. And, you know, what there's a heart that's white, there's a heart that's black, and there's a heart with checks. And you can see the pattern coming out here, the diamond that's white, the diamond is black, the diamond with checks. And then the same thing here, so at the bottom. And so what goes here? Well, it would be the square with checks. So in the AB level, it tends to look like this and be fairly simple. It's an overall pattern that just kind of needs to be completed. In the C and D level, it can get a little bit harder, because then you get things like, again, a little more like what maybe we were looking at 18, where they have to figure out what's going on. So, for example, maybe at the C and D level, you might see, for example, across the top, the alphabet backwards. You know, it might it might be CBA or HGF, NM, and they have to figure out that what these letters are in here are snippets of the alphabet backwards. And so I need a letter that goes on the bottom that it makes the alphabet go backwards. So at the CD level, you might see a question like that. But we're going to send you some of those if you have older kids to practice with. So you can, so at least they'll know that that could happen. And then at the bottom, I actually think I wrote this question. I didn't write it as clearly as I should have. What I should have said, I said, besides the carrot, which fruit is orange? And I should have said, besides the carrot, which food is orange? But actually, a pumpkin is a, believe it or not, is a fruit. Anyway, so what you have here is this, the kind of language that we were talking about before that you see in the bracken, which is besides the carrot, which means you have to take out the carrot and look at only the others, which of the other foods are orange? And so that is, this question number 20 is actually like a bracken question, typical of what you would see on a bracken. And just to give you a list, and we might, I think, maybe send out I think it would be helpful maybe if we were to send out a list of the kinds of concepts that they might ask about on the bracken. Let me just pull these out for you. So they might look at things like, they might have you comparing physical properties as we're doing here. We're comparing which of the other foods is orange. So we're doing a color comparison. Or they might ask about, some sort of size comparison. Or ask which items are alike, which items are different. They might ask about which is the smallest, the largest, the longest, the tiniest, which ones are similar, which ones are opposite. So those are the kinds of questions, and they'll put things out like this. And so maybe what we'll do is send you a list of the kinds of comparative properties that you might want to talk about when you can at home, so that if they see it on a test, they'll know what you're talking about. It's kind of, 'cause it's almost like the diagonal line. You just have to be exposed to it and know what it is. And then it's easy, but if you've never been exposed to it, it is not always easy. And the last question, which is number 21, this is based on the kinds of questions that a child might get on a bracken test. And you're going to, have them say, you can do it one of two ways. You can point to the image and say, what is this? Or you can say, can you point to the sphere? Can you point to the cylinder? Can you point to the cube? And after you do have your child, once they've, mastered what some of these shapes are, anytime you're out and about in life, walking around, if you've got a glass of water, you can say, look, this glass is like a cylinder. Or look, this pencil is shaped like a cylinder. So they start to see what a cylinder really is. And in reality, the thing about the bracken is I think it's the same test given for K through 2, right, Michael?
K through 2, yes. It's the same test, but it's a sliding scale if you're younger.
Right.
So your 4-year-old will be exposed to all these concepts.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying, that they do expect older kids to know more than younger kids, but when younger kids do know more, it's very helpful to them because they get a higher score and it's very helpful to them on their overall score.
Right, and it'll help with the overall, correct. So if your child can do really well on the bracken, it gives them a little more wiggle room on the OLSAT to miss a few.
Yes, exactly. Now, does anybody have any more questions just about, I want to add one more thing, is I did not, on this particular handout, there was not a math reasoning test, but the math questions on the OLSAT, and these are the kinds of questions we're sending you, they tend to be like word problems. So, It might be, let me just pull out a math problem, a question like, George ate 2 pieces of birthday cake at his party. His mother ate fewer pieces than he did. Mark the picture that shows how many pieces of cake George's mother ate. So then there'll be pictures that, that one of the pictures is the right answer. So those are the kinds of math questions you're going to get. They're going to be, the child has to think about it. It's not going to be an arithmetic question. It's going to be a verbal question with images that show, you know, this is what he ate. Here's the pictures of the cake that he ate. Now, his mother ate less, so which one is less? So, you'll see questions. We will send you questions that have ideas of less, more, equal. So hopefully, you know, you've exposed your child to those concepts. And if not, you still have time to do that.
Okay, I have a good clarification here.
Yes, did you have a question?
Yeah, the Bracken test. I understand that it is one test administered for grades K through 2.
Correct,
yes.
And that's for New York City.
Uh-huh, right, okay.
Mm-hmm. For those of you in New York City.
Right.
But that it is the same exact test administered, pre-K through second grade, correct?
Yeah, I am in New York City. So.
Okay.
Okay, yes. So when we say ULSAT, we're talking, for those parents who are in New York City, when we say the ULSAT, we're referring to the ULSAT / Bracken. So when people say they're taking the ULSAT in New York City, they're actually taking, one part is the ULSAT test and the other part is the Bracken test.
And I would just say that even if your child is taking a different test, you know, we're sending out a lot of questions now that are modeled after the ULSAT and the Bracken. A lot of our daily questions are also, many of our daily questions are also modeled after Stanford-Binet and WPSC as well. But practicing, no matter what test your child is going to take, practicing all these questions, it's very supportive of any kind of testing they might take, because these are how these test questions tend to sound, and they're all testing for the same types of abilities. You know, the things I was talking about on the Bracken, the comparisons, that kind of thing, those are on all the different kinds of tests that you might take. So all just doing any of these questions will be supportive of any test that your child is going to take for admission to a gifted program or a private school. And I think that's it in terms of reviewing the questions. What were you going to say, Michael?
Oh, just I was going to say, does anyone have any other questions about this topic? Karen, you did an amazing job, so thank you for covering this so thoroughly for everyone. Mm-hmm. So we were opening it up for questions, and then we're going to get to our questions of the week here in just a minute after we address any questions that you may have over the information Karen just shared with us.
No? Okay.
Yeah,
if you think of a question,
phone, so
yeah, if you think of a question later, you feel free to ask.
Yeah, and we're just email us at help@testingmom.com, or you can email Karen at karen@testingmom.com, or myself, michael@testingmom.com, and we'll be more than happy to help you out and answer any of the questions that you may have. And, okay, Karen, we're going to go ahead and we have a few questions here we'll address quickly. We've been on the call a little over 30 minutes now, so we'll try to address these in the next 10 to 15 minutes.
Okay.
These are the questions that we receive from parents on a weekly basis. And we receive lots of questions, but many of the questions that are common questions we've probably already addressed in one of our previous teleseminars, which you can find on testingmom.com under parent resources. And then once you click into a teleseminar, it'll actually list all the questions that we answer during that teleseminar. So if you're looking for a specific question, let us know, and we can see if we actually already addressed it, or just go out there and you can see which questions we're addressing on a weekly basis. But we get lots of new, fresh questions every week, which is great. So first question here, Karen, is it's about the difficulty level of the ULSAT test prep questions from testingmom.com. Are they easy, harder, comparable to the actual ULSAT test?
Well, they are. It depends on where your child is, really. We tend to send mostly A, B types of questions out, although every once in a while we'll sneak a C in there. But so they tend to be on par really with maybe kids going into kindergarten, first grade. Although a lot of times you'll get on the daily questions, a lot of times I'll present the question as easy, which is more like an A, harder, which is maybe a little more like a B, and then hardest, which is more like about a C level question. So a lot of times you'll be able to, you know, there's actually three levels at which you can ask the question and you can turn it into a harder question. And what we're going to do, I think we're, because the majority of the people that we have are really K-1, so we tend to send out more of those, but we are going to be putting some downloads for CD questions, harder questions. So if you have older children, we're sending those out with the password for that. And if for any reason you have a problem getting those questions, just let us know. We'll make sure you get the password. But I would just say it's kind of a combination, and it never hurts a child who's a little older to do easy questions, like I said before, because the format of the questions that they're going to get on their test are exactly the same. The thinking process is exactly the same. So sometimes if they practice with easier questions, then they're even more ready to do harder questions because they've gone through the thinking process.
Yeah, and also one of the things as far as the test questions in general, most 4- and 5-year-olds, pre-K and kindergarten, probably maybe a little less than kindergarten, but most pre-Kers have never been exposed to any type of test in general, especially the test like an OLSAT test, where it's a very traditional test, if you will. So they're presented with a sheet of paper with the actual, you know, answers that they need to point to, and the proctor will fill in the little bubble for the answers to the test. So this is a foreign concept to most 4-year-olds as they go into the OLSAT test. Now, when you're talking about the Stanford-Binet or the ERB-WPSI, that's a little different story because they're with a trained psychologist who actually can redirect the child. So it's more of it's less of a testing atmosphere, if you will. And whereas the OLSAT is much more formal, rigid, if you will, as far as like it being more of a traditional testing atmosphere that we're used to going into school. But at the age of 4 years old, most of these kids have never been exposed to that concept. So you really want to make sure that your child is aware, you know, when they're, you know, when they're answering the questions, stay focused and to really take their time when they're answering them.
Yeah.
Did anyone have any questions from the audience? Just chime in and we can address those. We have several people on the call, so feel free to ask those. Next question here, Karen, it says, it's from a parent. It says, I have heard the classification section on the real test, which I believe they're probably referring to the OLSAT, can be confusing for kids because the questions can have more than one right answer, although one is more obvious than the other.
I did talk a little about that. This person is asking, how do you prepare a child for this? And one of the things that I think is really helpful is that anytime your child chooses an answer, always ask them, why do you think that's the answer? And let them tell you why they think that's the answer, because you want to make sure that their thinking is correct, that they're not choosing the right answer for the wrong reason, because you want them to choose the right answer for the right reason. So, you know, you'll see, if they do pick a different answer and they do have a good rationale for it, because one of the things that gets difficult is sometimes you get kids who are like really bright, I mean super, super bright, and they think, they're able to make connections that other kids don't make. So a normal, regular, most kids would make the obvious connection. A really bright kid, really gifted kid can sometimes think, well, that's the obvious answer. However, this could also be the answer because you could think of it this way, and they're thinking of it a whole different way. So if they're doing that kind of thinking, what you want to try to do is try to tell them, well, when you go in for your test or when you go in to do your questions with the special teacher, just try to think of what is the most clear, logical, answer that you can the first thing that pops into your mind. You don't want to think too hard about it, just what seems to be the most right answer. If you can help them think that way, because that is going to be the answer they're looking for.
Okay, great. The next question here, Karen, is we get this question quite a bit, actually. I believe we addressed it last week in our teleseminar. It says, do you know what goes on during round 2 of Hunter Elementary School and how we can prepare for it? For those parents who are outside New York City, just to give you a brief overview of Hunter, Hunter is a gifted and talented elementary school here in New York City. It's in Manhattan. Children are tested to get into the school and the only entrance is in going into kindergarten. And it's very competitive, and the children, it's not part of the public school system here in New York City, but it is, it has public funding, so there is actually no tuition. The children are required to take the Stanford-Binet for the round one Hunter test to see if they qualify to be invited back to round two. The cutoff on the Stanford-Binet historically, the cutoff scores have ranged from anywhere from 142 to 148. This year, because of the fierce competition and how many students applied, it actually went up to 149 this year, which is the highest it's ever been as far as admission into the second round at Hunter. So at the Hunter Elementary School, I believe it was around 3,500 kindergartners applied for 50 spots. And the second round of Hunter is when the children, if they score 149 or above on the Stanford-Binet, will be invited back to Hunter to have group sessions with other children who have been invited back to the round two of Hunter. This question is more like, how can we prepare for it? There's really no way per se to prepare for it except to make sure that your child can listen to follow directions, works well with other children. They will be in a group setting. The round two of Hunter will not be an individual one-on-one interview. It'll be in a group classroom setting. I believe I've heard anywhere from 15 to 20 students, and they usually break up into small groups to see how your child would interact with other children. We have a very in-depth response to this very question that we taped last week, and that would be under the teleseminars on testymom.com under the parent resources section. And the taping date was on January 6, 2011. You can go there, and we give a very in-depth response over Hunter. I believe we talk about it for about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So if you want to go back to our library on teleseminars, I would highly recommend that. And Hunter is just extremely competitive as far as the round two goes. It's more of, I think a lot of it's just to validate what they get from the parent reports, from the preschool reports, and also to validate the Stanford-Binet and the accuracy of it to make sure that these children are exceptional in some area. Karen, did you have anything to add to that?
No. I think if someone's really interested in that, go back and watch and listen to last week's teleseminar because you'll get a lot of information.
Right. The next question here is, how are the kids tested? Are they expected to read the questions for themselves? I suspect my boy would be able to read the questions and answers, but my girl would struggle a bit to read all of the questions properly, but should be able to answer all the questions correctly. They are both 4.5 years old this Friday, but by summer I assume my daughter shall be able to read all the questions too. This is coming from a parent who's actually international, and they're going to be moving here to the United States and planning to take the GNT test this summer. How are the kids tested? So just to let everyone know, the test is oral, so it will be given orally to the students. And the questions, they are not expected to read for themselves. And at the age of 4, if you have a younger one, they do not have to be able to write. All they have to do is be able to point to the correct answer, and then the test proctor will fill in the little bubble, and that's for the OLSAT test.
Michael, what if they're going into second or third grade? Do they read the questions themselves, or are they?
Yeah, they read the proctor will read the question and then they mark the answer.
So listening is so. That's why listening is so important. Being able to listen and pay attention, because they're not going to read or be able to go back and read it themselves. They really have to listen to the question.
Right, and that's part of the whole OLSAT is the listening skills, because what the OLSAT in particular really hones in on listening skills, because, part of the program here in New York City in particular for the gifted and talented is to make sure that the children can listen and listen thoroughly so they can follow directions as well.
But this is the same also even with a WPC or the ERB or Stanford-Binet. Children don't read the questions. The questions are read to them even as they're a little bit older. So they never read the questions.
Yeah, and in the Stanford-Binet and WPC, there can be there's more redirection, whereas the OLSAT, there's no redirection, and the proctor can only ask the question once for the OLSAT. The next question here is, can the GNT tests be taken abroad? This is from the same parent who's moving from overseas to New York here in the next few months. Also, is the GMT program only available in public schools or private schools? And can the test be taken abroad? For the OLSAT, no, it cannot be taken abroad. He's referring to the New York City Gifted and Talented Program, and the answer to that would be no. As far as the WPSI and the Stanford-Binet, do you know, Karen?
Yeah, those can be taken. You can make arrangements to take those outside the country, usually. You just have to connect with the ERB office or, I'm not sure how it is around the country, but, like, if you were in another city, let's say you were in Atlanta and you were applying to private schools there and you were in another country, if it's a Stanford-Binet or a standardized test, I would think that they would accept. You could call the schools to be sure, but I would think they would accept the scores of those tests given abroad because it's a standard test.
Correct. And the only exception, I believe, to that would be actually Hunter.
Well, Hunter,
you're in New York.
Right, would not.
Right. Yeah, they give you a list of like 12 mm-hmm. psychologists, and these are the only 12 you can go to.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think it's 10 or 12 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And also, are GNT programs only available in public schools or private schools too? They're actually available in both, and it really depends on the private schools. There are several GNT private schools here in New York City, and I believe there are quite a few in any major metropolitan area.
Yeah, around the country.
Around the country. There are some private schools who have a GNT curriculum or advanced placement curriculum that's within the school. So they'll have their own self-contained classroom with a GNT program. I would recommend checking your local private school just to see what type of GNT program they have, or a lot of places just call it advanced placement or some other phrase, which is just an advanced curriculum. It just really depends where you live, and usually any big metropolitan city should have at least one or two private schools that really focus on gifted and talented, and then just general private schools who may have a GNT internal program that's self-contained classroom or an enhanced program. Karen, did you have anything to add to that?
No, I thought that's pretty good. That's okay. A good explanation.
Great.
Thank you.
Looks like we've been on the phone now for almost an hour. That
oh
was
my
quick.
God.
I know.
So fast.
It's great. It did go fast, and we had really great participation tonight. We had several people call in, so we really appreciate everyone calling in tonight. And we're going to open it up for questions. If anyone has questions, we'll take the next 5 minutes or so to answer any of your questions. So feel free to chime in. Everyone is unmuted, and we can take questions now.
I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
I like question number 5,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to know, in the upcoming weeks, now that you guys have the Level C questions prepared for the OLSAT, are you going to have more of questions number 3? Now, my kid didn't find that all that difficult, but what I particularly like about that particular question is that it's actually 3 bullet points in one. Like you're saying that they have to be able to remember what's asked of them, and there's 3 things that they have to look for.
Right, right.
So I like that type of question. He got that one right, but I could definitely see where he could use the practice on more of those.
Yeah, well, we'll put more of those out. We do have more of those questions, and we will put more of those out. And actually, question 4 is very similar to question 3. It's a slightly easier than question 3, but it's very similar. And this is typical of the kinds of questions that they'll ask, where there'll be these pictures that, and you can see how close these pictures are and how easy it would be to make a mistake, you know. And so we will put more of those out in our questions that are in the next few, this week and next week. We will definitely get you more of those.
Okay, and is 3 considered level B or C?
3 is, hold on a minute, because I wrote it down. 3 is a level C question.
Okay.
3 is a level C question, and 4 was a level B question.
Okay.
So 3 is a harder question.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll do more of those, and I do have more of those to put out.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we still have a couple of minutes left, so if you have any questions, feel free to chime in, and we can take those questions.
Hey, Michael, this is a quick question. Can you, I have read it, but can you quickly explain what level B and C means?
Sure. And Karen can chime in. Level, just the level is the difficulty level of the OLSAT. So I believe it goes from a level A through, I want to say, H, because the OLSAT is actually can be taken up through high school, I believe. And the when we talk about level A OLSAT, that is the test that's usually given at the pre-K kindergarten level. So that's the one that's specifically given here in New York City is level A. And then we have level B, which is the first grade level. And then level C is the second grade level. And then level D is the third grade level in most cases. It really depends on the school district that you live in, because sometimes the C and Ds, depending on what school district you're in, could actually go second or third or vice versa, depending. But for sure, the first OLSAT level will be level A. So if your child's in pre-K going into kindergarten or kindergarten going into first grade, they will be given the OLSAT A test. And the only difference between the pre-K and kindergarten OLSAT test is there are 20 more questions on the OLSAT for the kindergartner, but all the other questions are the exact same questions, and that's for the New York City Gifted and Talented Program testing.
Exactly.
Karen, did you have anything to add to that?
No, that's pretty much correct. Yeah.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering, how does the test, I heard that the test gets graded according to your birth date. Can you explain that? Like
sure.
if you're born in March versus you're born in September and you get the same.
Sure. So what happens is the test will actually be graded depending on are you in New York City or?
Yes.
Okay. And the Gifted and Talented test?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to get clarity. Okay. So if your child is compared in depending on the quarter in which they were born. So your child, if they were born in January, February, or March, will be compared to other children in that same time who were born in that same time frame within the first quarter. Same with second quarter, so April, May, June, and then third quarter, July, August, September, and then fourth quarter, October, November, December. So if you have a child who was born in March, and a child who's born in September, those two will not be compared to one another in the scoring. So they will only be compared to other kids within the 3 months within that first 3 months when, you know, if they're in first quarter versus third quarter. And then as the younger you are, the more questions that you can miss. So the philosophy behind it in New York City is like it's not really fair, you know, for a 4-year-old, you know, who's in January to be compared to, you know, the same kid taking the test in who has a December birthday because it's almost a year. So they're, you know, so what they did in New York City was divided up into quarters. So your child will be compared to other children born in that same quarter.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We have time for, I think, one more question. Does anyone have any final question that we can take for you?
Overall, how well do you think kids do on the OLSAT? Is that too general to answer? Like, do you think it's too easy? Because everybody keeps telling me that it's really hard.
Do I think the OLSAT's easy? No, it's not an easy test.
It's a hard test. It really is.
It's a very hard test. And it really depends, you know, it's a very difficult test, especially for a 4-year-old, because the OLSAT, based upon the research that I have done, the OLSAT is not actually designed for a 4-year-old. It's been designed for a kindergartner. So what they did in New York City in particular was just take 20 questions out and then say, oh, okay, it's okay for a pre-K or a 4-year-old to take this test. It's a difficult test. I think the most difficult thing that, and this is my personal opinion, is, and Karen, you can chime in, is a lot of these concepts that are presented on the OLSAT, especially for a 4-, 5-, 6-year-old, even 7-year-old, some of these the child just hasn't been exposed to. they haven't heard the words before. You know, like we were talking earlier tonight when Karen was going over all the practice questions. Diagonal, as an example, if a four-year-old has never been exposed to that word or seen something diagonal and it's been explained to him or her, then they're going to struggle with these questions. Or, you know, a pyramid. You know, if they see a pyramid on the Bracken test, you know, if they don't know what a pyramid is, they're going to call it a triangle. And for you know, my personal opinion is just exposing your child to these concepts that, you know, are really going to help them on these tests, but also going to help them in school in general. You know, all the things that we send on a daily basis at testingmom.com really help you prepare your child to do well in an educational setting. And, you know, part of that is a test setting as well, because we want children to go into these tests being very confident that they've at least been exposed to the concepts that are presented on these tests. So that's where, you know, the difficulty, it's a difficult test. And I think part of the difficulty is also there's no redirection. So if you have a child who may have some attention issues or is, you know, can't sit still, maybe a little fidgety, you know, the test proctor can't redirect the child. And the child could be extremely bright because there are a lot of, you know, very bright children who may be a little hyperactive and just can't sit still, and they may not be able to listen. But, you know, if you said the question twice to them, they could ace the OLSAT. But if they have trouble listening and test stamina and sitting still for a long time, they're really going to struggle, and they could actually do very poor on the test. And Karen and I have heard time and time again from parents who have taken the other tests like the Stanford-Binet or the ERB-WPC. And one of the things we've heard consistently is, my child did great on the Stanford-Binet, but they bombed the OLSAT. Or my child did wonderful on the ERB-WPC, and they did poorly on the OLSAT. So, you know, when we start hearing these types of conversations, it's like, well, what's really going on? Is it like, you know, the child's bright one day and they're not the other? No, it's more of, you know, the tools and the techniques that you need to make sure that they're prepared for the specific test that they're going to take. And so my recommendation is exposing your children to the concepts that you know are going to be on the test, and also the test stamina, to make sure that, you know, they can sit still for a long time, and also the listening skills to make sure that they can listen thoroughly through the whole question.
And Karen, these are all things that'll help them in school anyway. So it's not like you're trying to get this in for the test. I mean, it's certainly important for the test, but every single thing that Michael talked about will be very helpful to them in school.
Okay.
Okay, and I think we're out of time. So if you have any other questions, feel free to email us again at help@testingmom.com, or you can email Karen at karen@testingmom.com or myself at michael@testingmom.com. And we really appreciate everyone taking time out of their busy schedule tonight to attend this teleseminar. It will be posted on the testingmom.com site over the next couple of days, and it'll be posted by this weekend. Thank you, everyone. And again, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.